the unsurpassed, penetrating and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in the 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha. So today, surprise, I'm going to talk a little bit about compassion. And some of us are new, and some of us have been coming for a long time, and some of us have heard most of what I will say before, but please be patient, because actually I myself never tired of hearing what I need to hear over and over again. All the forms of Avalokiteshvara, all the forms of compassion that we bow to as we go around the hall, most of them look like nice ladies, but some of them don't, you know. And there's a sort of the strong, dark ones. We don't have so many of the strong, dark ones. We used to have a lovely sort of dark-looking Kandayan, but I don't know where he is. And all these different forms are the different ways we find compassion or we see compassion in our own life. As I said yesterday, Acharanatha is a form of Avalokiteshvara. He's a form of compassion, a fierce form. When the nice lady doesn't do it for us, the big guy with the stick might, you know. When we don't seem to be able to be getting the message, as it were, that we need to do something differently, when things are okay, well then maybe some little bit of suffering can get us to change our view. It's still part of compassion. I'm going to tell you the story I've told 1,000 times about Avalokiteshvara, who made this great vow to save all beings, and was saving beings for thousands and thousands of years. And then one day, she looks down, and there's just as much suffering as there ever was. She falls into despair and shatters into 1,000 pieces. And Amida Buddha sees this and says, well, that won't do. So he glues her back together again. But from her heart, and she has 1,000 hands and 1,000 eyes. It gives her extra help to help beings. So that's why you have this one, the Kanjan with 1,000 arms and a little eye in each hand, so she can see where to help and help more. But from her heart sprang Acharanatha, the fierce one, who will help out when the nice lady isn't enough for us. Anyway. And as you see, most of the forms of, or many of them, involve water. She's floating on the sea of suffering. She's got a little vase of water, which is pouring out, the water of compassion, pouring it out upon beings. Often you see these waves, in most of them, she's standing over the sea of suffering, the sea of samsara, the sea of birth and death, with a vase of water, like the one over there. She's got this little vase. Doesn't look like much, but it keeps on pouring. It doesn't stop. It's not like she runs out of water and has to go for a refill. It just keeps pouring. Because that's how compassion is. It just keeps on pouring. It pours through us because it comes from something more than just us. This water of compassion, this aspect of water that flows through everything and washes everything, is a large part of compassion, just the washing of things with kindness, you know. Opening up to compassion, recognizing it and opening up to it, is an attitude of mind that we can cultivate. Opening up to compassion in our lives, recognizing it, seeing it, and opening up to it. And this is why we bow to all these images. We're opening ourselves up to them, recognizing them, seeing that they can help us. And as we bow to all the situations in our lives, we can learn from them because we're accepting them, recognizing them, letting them help us. Offering compassion to other beings as we do the ceremony. We're also offering compassion to the suffering of the world, to beings we know and love who are suffering, to all beings. There's a lot of suffering in the world, and we can offer compassion. We can ask Avalokiteshvara, or ask compassion, to just pour that water on all beings, however we look at Avalokiteshvara, whether as a being or as just an essence of compassion that pervades the universe, to just invite that to help all beings. It's much bigger than us. We don't know how it works, but it works. Seeing compassion in our own lives, seeing how it manifests in all kinds of ways. The kindness of other people, you know. The ones we know and love, and they're kind to us and we're kind to them. Ones we don't know at all, complete strangers, who are just kind out of the blue and do something that's just breathtaking. And even people we don't like that much. You know, kindness from them, kindness to them, to help soften that situation. If we don't get along too well, a little kindness, a little water of compassion can go a long way. It moistens the thing. It's not all sort of dry and hard. It softens things. And our own kindness to people, it just comes up spontaneously. You know? Oh, very nice. The things we take for granted, there's compassion in all these things that we use, the clothes we wear, the tools we use, the frying pan, you know, our bed, all these things, the water that we still have access to. To not take these things for granted, but to see them acting kindly to us, that they help us. And we can have compassion for them and use them well and not squander them, chuck them out when they're not much use anymore, or be ungrateful, but to practice gratitude for all the little things we use every day. Not take them for granted anymore. And then there's not so very positive things, the things that are not so very welcome that come into our lives, the difficulties we have. Sometimes these very difficulties are our best help. If we're willing to accept them, work with them, see what we can learn from them, to be open to them and not resist and complain, but to actually use them positively. Achalanatha, again, there he is, you know, thump. You can learn something here. Very kind, he's a compassion. He's not a mean guy, he's compassion. The difficult situations in our lives can actually help us if we give them half a chance. The fact that we have suffering at all is the work of compassion. Because if we didn't suffer, we wouldn't learn anything, actually. It's fine when everything's going well, but we're a lot more likely to come to training in the Dharma if we have a little suffering. When everything's fine, why would we bother? Everything's okay? Yeah. But when we're suffering, that's when we, you know, turn up. And so our suffering, well, true, isn't it? Our suffering helps us, actually, because to come across the Buddha Dharma and to be able to do something about that suffering is about the best thing we can do for ourselves, is the greatest compassion we can have, is to see that suffering and do something about it, to allow that compassion to flow through us. When you do harm, for instance, we suffer. When you hurt somebody, we feel bad. And we might make an enemy. And things are not so good. We get karmic consequence from this. Nobody's happy. And of course, other people suffer. And having that suffering, we can learn something. Ah, that wasn't so good. I don't want to do that again. I'll be careful next time. Next time I'm crabby or irritated with this person or whatever it might be. Be more careful. When we grab onto something and won't let go, this creates suffering. We suffer because it's going to get taken away from us. We lose everything in the end. We die, you know. But in the meantime, everything comes and goes. Our relationships, our jobs, our houses, our everything. It all actually is flowing by and you cannot grab onto any of it. You can enjoy it while it's there and make the best of it and make the most of it. And love people, of course. But then when something is being taken away and you feel it pulling away, whether it's a person or a thing or a job or a situation or our health or whatever it might be, when we grab on, we create suffering. If it's time to make a change in our life and we won't do it, there's a tension and a suffering there, you know. When something happens that we don't like, it's easy to fall into blaming somebody, blaming circumstances, blaming ourselves, blaming anything. But if we can not do that, if we can refrain from blaming and not be bitter and resentful, but to accept it and to maybe see how that happened, it helps immeasurably. It's a whole different attitude. The law of karma, cause and effect, is the working of compassion. Otherwise we couldn't learn. You do a good deed, you get a good result. You could do a bad deed, you get a miserable result. This is what the Buddha said, true. You know, if we practice kindness, if we do our best in life to help ourselves, to help other beings, not to create suffering, not to be greedy and grabby, not to be, you know, mean and angry or any of those aspects, if we can relinquish that or work on it, it helps hugely. And that's why we're here, actually. Because this is what we're trying to learn, is how to stop creating suffering, how to do better. And it means changing our way of looking at things, resolving to do things differently. And we're so used to blaming other people for our suffering, blaming our circumstances. It's not my fault. This is, you know, it's life is against me. Everything's stacked up against me. It's not fair, unfair, unfair. We bang our heads against the wall and don't see the door, you know. But if we can stop banging and look up, we might see that there's another way to look at it all, to see, how can I do better with this situation? Am I doing something that's making it worse? Have I brought it about myself? I might not have done. But how can I help myself not to live in bitterness and resentment and blame, but to actually use it to the good? Because we can use it to the good. Just about anything. Whether it's pain, sickness, a broken relationship, a job that didn't work out, all kinds of things. We can use it to the good. There's all sorts of stories of people who've, I know, you know, a lady who was a very successful executive and got chronic fatigue and was completely debilitated by this and realized that this was bringing her to a spiritual life, having struggled to keep going for years, making herself sicker and sicker, then realized, I just can't do this anymore. Ground to a halt, her whole life changed. And she began a spiritual path and never looked back and was then really grateful for that illness. And to be able to take something like that positively is a wonderful thing rather than just pushing on or resenting it or being angry about it. But to say, okay, something's getting my attention here. Here comes a 2x4. Okay, I need to do something different. It's a total different attitude. This is opening up to compassion. To see the positive side of something that's happened to us or something that's come our way. How can I use this to the good? How can I change my way of doing things? If it's caused by something I've done, well, then maybe I can change. If it's just something that's come my way, maybe I can learn from it and accept it, even with gratitude, the thing that I might have dreaded. Surprising. Blaming ourselves and judging ourselves. It's all my fault. I'm just the way I am. I can't do anything, you know. There's nothing I can do about me. Well, there is. That's why we're here again. We can change. We can learn. No matter what mistakes we may have made in the past, we can change. We can learn from them. No matter how we may feel about ourselves, we can still change. Some of us are so, I think most of us, fall into self-judgment a lot. You know, I'm unworthy, or I'm terrible at this training business, or I'm just not a very nice person, or I'm angry all the time, or I'm so greedy, or so. And actually, we're probably pretty much like everybody else. But this feeling that we're lacking something, or that we're innately bad, innately unworthy, unworthy of compassion, that compassion's for everybody else, but it's not for me, you know. To see that little mechanism in our mind, then we can look at it and think, well, maybe it's not the case. Why shouldn't I have compassion? Why shouldn't I have a little bit of avalokiteshvara's water, you know? I won't put up my umbrella and keep it off. I can let it flow through a little. But the self-judgment, I'm always going on about self-judgment because I think it's such a basic thing, especially for Westerners. We seem to be steeped in it. We don't even notice because it's so pervasive. You know, yelling at ourselves because we've done something we think is dumb. We don't need to do that. We can just think, oh, maybe that wasn't so smart, but okay, you know. It's not a sin, not terrible. If we can remedy our past mistakes, fine. If we can't, we can still learn from them and resolve not to do that again. Contrition for the ways you've harmed people, to see what we've done. So again, to make reparation where we can, and just simply see it, and accept our consequences for what we did without complaint makes it easier to bear. Contrition makes it easier to bear. And part of that is accepting our karmic consequence, not blaming. It wasn't my fault, you know. And even if it was my doing, I don't have to blame myself. I can just see, what did I do? Okay. Harmful, not good. Don't do it again. But there doesn't have to be this self-flagellation that we often fall into. But true contrition purifies the heart, helps us to breathe more easily. We can move on. Something is washed away by this water of compassion. Compassion for ourselves in seeing where we've made mistakes and resolving to change. It's a wonderful thing. As I said, self-judgment is a huge thing. Also, feeling that we're not worthy of compassion, we're not worthy of help, that I could help other people, but I don't need help, or I don't deserve help. Again, we're putting up our umbrella and keeping the help away, you know. Of course we need help. Everybody needs help. None of us is completely independent and in charge of everything and in control of our life. Everybody needs help now and then. Everybody needs kindness. And if we keep trying to make it go one way, I can be kind, I can give to others, I'm fine. It's a kind of pride, really, you know. Well, I have something to give, but I don't need anything. It's silly. To be able to give and receive kindness and compassion, generosity, all these things, it has to go both ways. We can't just give kindness. We have to be able to accept it. And sometimes it's hard when we're helpless, when we're sick, when we're poor, you know, whatever it is, when you feel really rotten, miserable, to be able to accept a little kindness from another human being, from our family, our friends, asking Avalokiteshvara for help, calling on compassion. Please help me. I'm in a really difficult spot right now. However we think of Avalokiteshvara, however we see this seeming being, whether as a being that hears us, the regarder of the cries of the world, or just opening up to the compassion of the universe, however we look at it, we can always open up to that. And if we are willing to relinquish that self-judgment, it helps immeasurably that we can actually open up to compassion rather than thinking, oh, I've been too bad, it's not for me, or, well, I don't need it, you know. But just to have the humility and openness to say, yes, I need help. Everybody needs help. I can't do it all by myself. I'm not really in control of my life. I might think I am, but things make it pretty clear that I'm not. And I need help too. I'm just another human being. I'm nothing special. I'm not specially nice. I'm not specially horrible. I'm not specially worthy or unworthy. Just another being. you know. Kindness both ways, compassion both ways, openness, giving and receiving. Sitting still is the practice of compassion. Sitting still in meditation is about the kindest thing we can do for ourselves, and often a pretty kind thing for everybody around us, because it makes us happier and nicer that we can sit still in the midst of the things that come up for us, sit still in the midst of our emotions and not just act on them. When we practice meditation, we're less likely to give in to our impulses of anger and grasping and fear and so on. We're more likely to be able to just take a little breath and be still with it, whether we're sitting in meditation or whether in our daily life, in the midst of busyness, all sorts of things coming at us. If we can take that little breath, this is compassion. Compassion is all around us, and it comes, it's all through us, and it fills up all that space between us and other people, or between one thought and the next, or one between our response and our action. If we just take a little moment, it can be full of compassion, because that is what helps us to not do the dumb thing we might have done, or the anger response, or whatever it might be. Compassion fills everything. I was just thinking this morning, there's all this seemingly empty space. What if it's all stuffed with compassion, and that all the space in between us, all the space in between the things, the events of our lives, whether in physical space or in time, if that is all filled with compassion, then all we have to do is take a breath, and there it is. We're breathing it in, and we can just accept it, open up to it, and with a shred of luck, recognize it. It is there. It's all around us. It's all through us. It fills everything. And when we allow that little space, there it is. Pausing for a moment before we do something we might regret, you know. When we're angry with someone, to consider, what are they having to deal with? You know, it's not just me. What are they up against? Maybe it's this little thing has nothing to do with me. They're just having a bad day. You know? Or before grabbing something, am I grabbing it at the expense of somebody else? You know? That little space makes all the difference. The space that seems empty, full of compassion. Compassion is the antithesis. I keep saying that word and getting it. Antithesis of selfishness. Because if we're selfish, there's no room for compassion for ourselves or for somebody else, anybody else. When we open up to that compassionate view, we're opening up our little mind to a much wider view, which includes everybody, not just me and my stuff and what I want and what I'm afraid of, but everybody and all their stuff and all their lives and feelings and fears and all that. We're embracing a much wider view. Compassion is feeling with. We can feel with other beings, not feel despite other beings or against other beings. We're not separate from other beings. We're with other beings. We're all in this boat together. When we're afraid, if we can find compassion for ourselves in this moment of fear, whether we're afraid of a person or a situation or something is happening or we feel helpless or whatever it might be, if we can find compassion for our little fearful self, and maybe compassion for the thing or the person we're afraid of, it helps immensely. Again, there's a little bit of space there, which we're not completely drowning in fear, because fear is separation. Me against everybody else. Me in my own little bubble against the world. And really, it's not that way at all. We're just part of everything. And most of our fear is needless, and sometimes our very fear brings on the thing we don't, you know, we dread. And if in the midst of fear, we can find a little compassion for ourselves that's afraid, particularly, and for anybody else in the situation. Because when I'm afraid, it's very likely that another person involved is also afraid. Maybe I can have compassion for them. In wars, I'm sure everybody is scared stiff. And, you know, it's everybody needs compassion. Sitting still, we can ask for help in the midst of fear or anger or desire, whatever it might be. Just to sit still, take a little breath, a little compassion breath, then we can see things more clearly. Asking for help. As we're bowing to all these forms of Avalokiteshvara, we're asking for help too. We're venerating compassion. We are recognizing it, opening up to it, and also asking for its help. Please help me. Please help all beings, all of us, in this saha world of suffering. Everybody has suffering. Some have a huge load of it, as we know. To ask, may the compassion of Avalokiteshvara, the compassion of the Buddha, the compassion of the universe, help me and all beings. And this is the practice of faith, that there is compassion there, and that if we call upon it, it will and does help us. And so it does. When we ask for help, we get it. Not always in the form we wanted, but we get help. Sometimes it's him over there. Compassion flows through everything, as I said. This compassionate water, you can see it as space that pervades everything. You can see it as the water that flows through everything. Flows through all the situations we find ourselves in. This sticky situation we might have with somebody right now. Compassion can come into that, and it does. Or the illness we might have that we're afraid of. Or death, maybe, that we're afraid of, whether we're young or old. It can be, you know, wake us up in the night and we think, what's going to happen? You know, how's it going to be like? The worries we may have about our family or our job or whatever. Or our feeling of being separate from everyone else. Or lacking something. All these things, all these forms of suffering we have, there's a million of them. And compassion can flow through all of these and soften them all. All our worries and fears and sufferings, and all the worries and fears and sufferings of all beings. Compassion does flow all through all these things, no matter what it looks like. With all the suffering that's going on in the world, compassion is greater. It's greater than our little view. It's greater than all our little views. All the stuff that happens, all the awful things that we see on the news and in the world, is it worse than it used to be? Is it better than it used to be? Avalokiteshvara, thousands of years ago, despaired because, well, so the story goes, because it was just as bad as ever. Well, it seems like it's still just as bad as ever. But beings learn. Individuals learn and do better. And I think that's what it's often hard to see. An individual being can learn something and change and be kinder and do better. But the world looks like it's still going on the same old way because we don't see the kindness always. We don't see the courage of people and the goodness and the refraining from doing something. We don't see all the kids that don't go and shoot up a whole church of people and so forth. We see what the awful things that do happen, but there's a whole lot of goodness, kindness, and, yes, courage in this world that we may not see. And if we can have faith in that, that there is goodness there and not just the dark side, which is what we get on TV and so forth, to have faith in the innate goodness of beings, no matter what, there's something a whole lot bigger than our view, a lot bigger than the news, a lot bigger than all our human views. This is just a little tiny planet in the scheme of things, is it? Even after all. The enormous amount of goodness that there is in the universe, that compassion that does pervade everything, whether we see it or not. We can offer merit. We can help where we can. And we can just keep a bright heart and practice faith that fundamentally there is something at work that is for goodness, that compassion is there within all these situations, that suffering does help us to learn something. It would be nice if it could be an easier way, but it doesn't seem to be that way. It seems to be sometimes we have to learn the hard way. And to be able to just have faith in goodness and kindness of ourselves and of other beings and of the universe as a whole. It's not just a, you know, niceness, pretend niceness thing. It actually is true. And as much as we can open ourselves up to great compassion, to the unborn, undying, uncreated, that which is greater than we are, as much as we can open up to that and entrust ourselves to it and let it flow through us, because it's not our compassion, it's much bigger than us, but let it flow through us and around us and through our lives to help us and help all beings, pervading everything, soaking everything through and through. This is what really helps. And that's it. Thank you.